Hello, Sean. Welcome to Fast Track Podcast.
Hey, Asi. Pleasure to be here and an honor for being featured in your podcast.
Yeah, it's my honor. Like last time we chatted on your podcast, The Leadership Stack, and I discovered that you have a very interesting background and your experience is really worth sharing here for my audience. So I want to ask you, how did you start your own company, right? How did you grow it from one person to now have 50 plus employees and 1 million revenue?
Yeah, so actually it started from, so I'm an almost kickout student in college, right? I failed 28 units, it's a lot. And I realized not a lot of companies would hire someone with 28 failing units in their transcript of records. So it's a series of divine appointments. That's the best way I could describe it. Because I was writing in a blog called God and You. And it's a blog about my faith as a single Christian guy. And it's just something that I like to do. And I realized when I look at the stats, not a lot of people were reading my stuff. And as a writer, you pour your heart and soul into your articles. That's the goal, to have more readers and subscribers. And I searched around and this thing called SEO kept popping up. So I looked around, what's this SEO thing? And this is way back 2009. And the little references and pieces of content out there that talk about SEO, I had to put these hodgepodge articles together, do my own experiments, because some of them were unethical in Google's eyes, some of them were ethical. I had to figure out which is which. And I wrote everything in another blog called SEO Hacker. And that blog cost like $60 for me to put up because I did the design, so simple. And the hosting, the domain name, I bought it somewhere $60. That's really how I started. And people started to read my stuff there, share as well some of the content on social media. And I started getting inquiries and people wanted me to do SEO for them. Some companies would start to hire me as a freelancer. Didn't have a company name. I wasn't registered. I remember your story, pretty much same thing, where we're just doing it. We're doing the work. We're not yet official, sure. And more clients started coming in to the point that I couldn't do the work myself anymore. So I had to hire people. And when I started out, I hired freelancers. That's the way to go. And then more clients came in. I had to incorporate. I had to get my first office, then hire more people as the client base grew. And really the engine of growth for SEO Hacker is because we rank number one for the money keywords like SEO Philippines, SEO services, SEO company here in this country. And actually, if you search from abroad, it's also SEO Hacker ranking number one. Just keep growing. Since SEO is a retainer, as long as we can retain the clients, we provide really good service to them. They feel like we take care of their site and we actually produce output, meaning they're ranking number one or first page for their keywords. Then they just retain with us every year. And we've grown it to something that is so surreal for me that now we're a million-dollar company and we're a 50-man team.
Can you give us, our audience, a little bit of context when you started writing your own blog and you explored the importance of SEO? At that time, were you trying to build a business or it's just a hobby, or did you have a job or you do it on the side, or is it planned or is it happened accidentally?
I would say that a lot of things just happened like it was the next bend. So imagine you're driving to a far off place and there's a mountain range, right? You're heading towards the mountains. You can't really see the trees. You can't really see the springs of water. You can't see the details. You just see the shadow of the mountain. It's blue and you can see the road and that's it. And all you can see is the next bend. Whatever your headlights can show you if you're driving at night, that's all you can see. So my experience in building the business, it's much like that. I can only see up until the next bend and that's it. And I did have a job. I was, for some reason, I got into HP. I don't know why they hired me up to today. It's one of the miracles of my life. And I was doing SEO on the side already because I started the God in You blog 2009. I got into HP somewhere 2010 of March. So I graduated Feb 2010, got into HP March 2010. But I worked there only 5 months and I told my leaders there that I have this thing called SEO Hacker and it's paying me 5 times more than what I'm getting in HP. And they were kind enough to understand my situation. And so we planned my transition out and HP is a really good company. I can't promote them enough. I can't say enough good things about them. And I finally went full-time building SEO Hacker. And I had no management background. I don't know how to hire. I don't know how to interview. I don't know how to manage an office. I didn't know anything about accounting, anything about legal. So I had to learn these things as I went and as the need arises as well. Now I have a lot more time studying ahead of time because a lot of the things I just outsource to third party, like legal, accounting, I just outsource these things. But during that time, it's really trying to figure things out by myself just when they come on the next bend.
I'm curious, like when you were working at HP, most of the biggest challenge for many young startups would be acquiring new customers and grow to a stage that is cash flow positive or have sustainable cash flow. And how long did it take you to arrive at that point? And what did you do to arrive that point within this time frame?
So the secret of SEO Hacker's growth is really ranking number one for our keywords, because it just makes so much sense that you're going to hire an SEO company who's actually ranking for their own keywords, right? That's the best proof of concept and proof of work that you could ever show to any potential client that would knock on your door. And with SEO Hacker, we've maintained that lead for years and years. We've always been number one. So I have that healthy pipeline. And I also happen to be a Filipino Chinese. And here in the Philippines, the Filipino Chinese community is not that big. But once you have a good reputation there as a very good supplier, take care of your clients and stuff, it just spreads out. So I got leads from there as well. I got a good pipeline from there. And it's all a matter of making sure that you do your work excellently and you take care of your reputation. Compile that with we are ranking number one and we're getting perpetual leads from there, perpetually good and qualified leads from there. That is really how SEO Hacker has reached stability at a very fast pace. In the second or third year, we were already a very stable company. And our fifth year was all about planning to scale up, having couple of floors of a commercial building already. I started out in the attic of my parents' house. It was hot, it was dusty, and it was nothing glorious. But from there to 5 years, fast forward 5 years, and I did rent like a residential house here in Parañaque where we hold office. And for a long time, we were in a residential house and that's our headquarters. And then I think it was like 6 or 7 years, then we got to upgrade to 3 floors of a commercial building. And that's a huge step up. And we had to prepare for scaling up all the capital expenses, all of the processes and systems that we had to put in place, all of the documentation that we have to write and put in place. But yeah, that's the stability came in early because of that secret.
Yeah. And now we're touching on the scale up phase, right? You mentioned you also moved to a bigger office, CapEx investment. How did you decide at which point you need to scale up and to how fast and to what extent? How do you make the transition from where you were to a bigger size company?
So that was not really a very tough decision when we were there, because hiring really good quality performers, A players, I would say, a lot of them would come into the residential headquarters that we had and see and say, that this might not be the kind of company they want to grow their careers in because it's a residential house. So there was that hiring choke point where if we had an office, very presentable, where it was well-designed in the interiors, and we had our official papers everywhere there, operating papers, that would make hiring a lot easier and better for us and build the team from there. And since we are a digital marketing services company, hiring A players is a very big deal. So that's one of the key drivers why we had to do that investment and spend that capital in upgrading our office. Another reason is we were growing too big. So that residential house was actually becoming smaller and smaller by the months that passed. And we knew there would definitely be a point in time where we wouldn't fit. And there was a transition point when half of us were working in the residential house and half would be working in the commercial building because it was just one street away. And so people would just walk to and fro. And we, at the end of it, we made it a staff house where people who lived quite some distance away could sleep there after work and they just go home in the weekend and come back when it's Monday again. It did play out pretty well. And the decision came in quite swimmingly.
And then when you talk about like hiring A players, I know very difficult to find the A players. From your own experience, what do you think are the qualities of A players that you are looking for your companies? And what are the commonalities among the people that you decide not to hire or the people who left? Yeah.
Okay, very good question. And for those of you who are listening in and you're just starting out, I want you all to know that I hired a lot of wrong people, right? So many wrong, bad people that I learned from. So my hiring process before was really bad. I would sit with the applicant and ask them a couple of few questions and then hire them because we needed someone to do the work. And when they'd screw up, guess what? They'd resign or I'd fire them and I'd need to do the work anyway. So it was really bad. Don't think that we were able to figure it out early on. Don't get discouraged by that. I'm just like you guys. We started out really not having a good hiring process. Then I listened to podcasts and read books. Patrick Lencioni's stuff is very helpful. He has books like The Ideal Team Player that it's a must read. And I hire now, the things that we look for generally are they have to be humble, meaning when it comes to correction, when it comes to making mistakes, they admit mistakes and they can be corrected. They're willing to learn from you. And they own up. They own up to anything exploded under their wing in a negative way. And the other trait we look for is hungry. They have to be driven. They have to be ambitious. They have to have that drive. Otherwise, if they're coming from a very wealthy family and they're just there for a couple of months with you and they just want to learn and then leave and pack up, that's not a person we'd want to hire, because we want to grow long-term with everyone in the team willing to serve the company and make it grow. So humble and hungry, very important. And the last one is smart. And I don't mean IQ smart, emotionally people smart. We want to hire people who can easily communicate to other people. And when you say communicate, it's not just one way. It's not a monologue. It's a two-way thing. So they have to be able to listen where the other person is coming from and communicate in a way where they are understood as well in what they want to bring into the table. And we need these people because we want to build a really good culture in the team. And if you have someone who's not people smart, the buck stops with them. They're the weakest link. And your culture is not going to grow if you have these kinds of people. So those are the three general things that we look for. Of course, they have to be competent. That's a given. All teams would hire for competence. It's not uncommon for companies to do that. So we give them tests and actual hands-on practical exams for them to try out. And if they fail there, then it's a no-go. We also have the culture exam. We're very fanatical about our culture, our core value. And we have 6 core values. That's grit, respect for work, challenger, experimentation, unity, and clarity. And we ask them questions, open-ended questions about these things where they do have the answers in multiple choice that they strongly agree or strongly disagree. So it's a 5 choice question in a scale. And the questions would be like, if you have something negative about the management or a peer, do you talk about it with other people in your team or do you bring it up to upper management? And if their answer is, yeah, that's like me, I bring it up to upper management, then they get plus points for that. But if they're like, yeah, I talk about it with other people and ask for their opinion, then it's going to be a negative for us. So we tally their points, we check their answers, and we check for their culture fit. Now we're very strict and we're very intentional about the people we hire. And it didn't used to be that way, but you got to learn, especially with a services company like us. We are built and operated by people almost completely from end to end. We're very careful about the people we hire.
Yeah, that's very well said. And I think those three points might also be very useful for someone who is looking for a job, right? Or who wants to progress within their own company. On the drive side, I find it's very interesting because I have noticed that from my personal experience while working with people from certain countries, like it's not, for example, the social welfare is not so good, or they have to make their own living. They cannot rely on the system. And people tend to be more hungry, you know, looking for that next opportunity. And in some markets, like people can be complacent with a normal salary or with any job. They can live a good life or okay life that they're okay with. They don't have to work harder. They have less drive and not so hungry. That's my personal observation.
And there's the flip side to that. If they're too, I would say, too challenged financially, they have, you know, they're a single mom or single dad and they really need the money, then we also try to tread carefully with these kinds of people, because it could be that they are too financially challenged, that they're going to be a problem for us. So it's really trying to tread carefully about what kind of people you're looking for and what level of drive you would want, what level of ambition and hunger you would want for your team to have.
Yeah, exactly. And now, like after 12 years, 8 months, of almost 13 years, having your company established, having a team, having so many clients on retainer, on your personal side, because this podcast, we often talk about personal financing, investment. On your personal side, how do you manage your own, let's say, investment or your wealth now as a established business owner?
Right. So when you're in the services industry, like I am, you just can't buy more stock and sell it at a higher price. We're not in trading. We're not in merchandising. So when we generate revenue that is in excess, what I do is I have to learn where to invest them. And my portfolio is diverse now, but I started with learning about stocks before. Now my stock portfolio is still there. I don't touch it anymore. I don't trade. I just invest. I do invest in real estate as well. And I invest in crypto. Crypto is my latest venture. So I have invested in crypto startups. And I also have ventured into investing in startups as well. So I trade equity for cash, or I trade equity for cash plus industrial effort, meaning we do SEO services for them. And since they can't really pay us because of their cash flow, because they're a startup, then they trade equity for it for me. So that's, I would say I'm a serial investor right now and an angel investor as well. I'm not part of a VC fund, but I choose my investments, especially if it's a startup, very carefully.
And do you invest in real estate or ETFs, or do you have a wealth manager that helps you to manage your investment, or you do it yourself?
I do it myself. So with wealth managers, I know that it's going to be a huge load off your back. But if you know what you're doing, meaning you studied it, and I do studying things that I'm interested in, then it would be a lot better, more profitable, and safer as well for you to manage your own finances. So ETFs, that's something that I'm really interested in because the yield is just at 5-6%, maybe less. And I'm interested in retirement plus inflation. So inflation is 5-6% per year. Retirement, you'd need 3%. So you add that up, you'd be at 8-9% that you need to beat. That's just enough for inflation. So it doesn't make sense for me. So I look for 8-12% per annum, not guaranteed, because there's still guaranteed investments. That's why you have to study and learn where you're going to be investing your money.
Yeah, it's funny because now you mentioned about ETF and the inflation. So here in Switzerland, inflation is almost flat, zero or zero point something. So for people who invest in ETF, say if you average out to 7% per year annual return, like you invest 10, 20 years, it's still a very good return if your inflation is pretty flat. But in Philippines, I guess the inflation rate is very high. So if you invest the same, S&P 500 ETF, it's not going to help you with your wealth creation. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
So you mentioned that before you started investing, you learn, you read books. But is there any mistake that you made in your investment journey?
For sure. And I consider those my tuition fee. So I've lost money, significant amounts as well, in investing that are, I would say there have been wrong investments where there would be no hope of recovering them. So I just parked it there. And if I did want to withdraw it, I could withdraw it, but at a loss. But there are investments where I'm really waiting for 5 years. I'm investing long-term. And in 5 years' time, if they yield 10% per annum, if they do shoot up, then that's a win for me. So I have learned from these wrong investments. I do believe that a lot of good investors have made mistakes and have incurred losses. And that's really the best place for you to learn, because you never forget when you lose money.
Yeah. Either you win or you learn.
Yeah, for sure.
Would you mind sharing with us what kind of mistakes did you make? Is it trading, or is it just didn't do enough research and investing something?
Yep, for sure. I would say that it's because of not doing enough research and also jumping in the hype train. So a lot of my investments that are I consider as losses, meaning there's no hope of them shooting up again, or there's very little chances of them shooting up again for me to be able to withdraw them at my investment price at the profit. I'd say most of them are in the crypto space. So my stocks portfolio have been performing quite well, my real estate portfolio as well. But in the crypto space, there's a big chance that you would lose. There's only a very small chance that you could win. But when you do win, there's a very high amount of return. The multiplier is like 8 to 10x at least, and it could go up to 100 to 400x if you win. So that would definitely cover the losses if you're someone who has a bigger risk appetite than the average human being. So yeah, I would say mostly in crypto, there are tokens that are not that popular, but there's a huge potential upside. But then when they are dumped and when they hit a very low price, there's almost no chances of them climbing up again.
But yeah, I agree with you. It's very risky and you have to know what you're doing. For me personally, after investing in crypto all these years, the lesson I learned is that once I started venturing into altcoins, once I started to buy and sell and trade, I would have lost more money than what I would have gained just by holding the more established coins. So that's my strategy now.
I think for me, I need to make that disclaimer. This is not financial advice, but the best crypto investments that I've made are because I know someone from the founding team or from the core team. So those investments that I make are usually at the pre-seed or seed round. And the moment that they launch and go public, they will hit 8 to 10x. And I only also invest in projects that have good longevity, meaning they lock your investment for a year, 2 years, and then you could only get a small amount, a small percentage of the tokens vesting every so often, every 2 months or every 3 months. So you can't really dump them along with all of the other pre-seed or seed investors because they are building something great. So those are the kind of investments in crypto that I am doing right now.
That makes sense. No, I understand. And many of them are at early stage in their tech development. So it might take a year or two once the application started to be used. And then probably you will see a much bigger upside. Yeah. And so now we talk about your business and then we talk about your investment. It seems like you really know what you're doing, right? You do your research, you educate yourself, and then you take actions. That's very great. But the next step, what are you looking for in the near future? Do you plan to grow your company to the next stage, or do you plan to hire a CEO to run it? Or what's your plan?
So one of the things that are in the pipeline right now that's pretty big is for us to be able to finally start on the building. So I purchased a 600 square lot in a commercial lot very near my house because I don't like commuting far, especially here in the Philippines. Traffic is deadly. And being able to build that building headquarters is the next big thing for us. Hopefully in the next 2 to 3 years, we're able to finally break ground. And in terms of hiring the next or raising the next people who would lead the company, that is still on the far horizon. I would love to be able to do that, but there's just not enough people in the Philippines who have the maturity, the professionalism, and the work ethic that would be required for them to be able to replace me as CEO. And I say that with all honesty, because the Philippines, if you notice, we're so good with entertainment. When it comes to voting via text, when it comes to international contests like the Miss Universe, if there are voting requirements, all Filipinos would be there. All Filipinos would vote. We love entertainment. The downside of that is growth is not something that is upheld here in our country. Not a lot of people read. Not a lot of people listen to podcasts or try to improve themselves or upskill themselves, especially in leadership. So there are very few people who are going to be considered as good leaders here in the country, unless you have to raise them up yourselves. And that's with the risk of them actually moving on and leaving you and or being poached by other companies. I'd say that's still on the far horizon, but definitely in the icebox. That's part of the roadmap, at least for me as CEO, transitioning down to another person leading the company, because I'm more of the entrepreneur kind of guy where I like starting things up. And I've been doing SEO Hacker for 12 years. I love it. Don't get me wrong. I do love it. I love what I'm doing. But I feel most alive when I'm actually starting something new and building it, making it grow.
Yeah, the entrepreneurial spirit. Yeah. Thank you so much, Sean. Thank you so much for sharing your personal experiences and your journey with us. And for the audience, you know, if you have a small business or if you have an established business, if you are looking for SEO specialist service, feel free to contact Sean. And if you have any questions or you would like to follow him on the internet, you can check out social media. Would you mind sharing with us where can people find you?
Yeah, sure. So I'm on LinkedIn. That might be the best place to find me and connect with me. Just search for my name, Sean, C-S-E-A-N-S-I. If you want to see my website and portfolio, you can go to my website. That's also my name, S-E-A-N.S-I, Sean.C. That's my website. Or if you want to shoot me an email, you could use my email address, im@sean.c. This letter. Thanks for having me, Yasin. Take care, everyone.